Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of June 7th through 14th. This week we're looking forward to summer and some of the films that are coming out. We have one of our critics, John Anderson, with us. Welcome, John.
Hi, Tim.
Now, John, we thought since we have you in the New York area, we would bring you in to discuss some of both the big films that people are looking forward to, but also some of the smaller films that might get overlooked. Maybe we can begin with a film you review in the current issue, which is Robin Hood, which I don't think I'm giving anything away here. You were not a huge fan of it.
I don't think anyone was a huge fan of it. I didn't read very many reviews that even gave it the benefit of the doubt. You know, we've all grown up on Errol Flynn, and Russell Crowe is no Errol Flynn. He's a perfectly good actor, but Ridley Scott's approach on this was, you know, you can spin your wheels in the medieval mud to a certain extent and never get any traction, and this movie sort of never had any traction. It never had any sense of fun, and I think what we really want from Robin Hood is a little bit of entertainment rather than, you know, misery, death, pestilence, and famine. It's, you know, they go a long way, but you know, you'd like to get a break at some point.
Well, yes, as you point out, use the word lugubrious to describe Russell Crowe's performance because, you know,
we don't get a chance to use lugubrious that often. So.
But there's not a lot of, as you said, a lot of play, a lot of, when you compare it to, say, Errol Flynn, who, you know, had some fun with the performance.
No, and of course, it's a totally different kind of movie and a different era. I mean, I don't think you could get away with making the Errol Flynn type of movie now. People would laugh at it. You know, they'd just think it was silly. Although, we all watch it.
Right.
And we all love it. Yeah. You know, it's just, it couldn't really be made now. But what Ridley Scott does is far too, it's just too serious. And you know, self-involved. And Russell Crowe and Cate Blanchett are perfect if you want to make a self-involved, overly serious movie.
Well, here's a case where, you know, the elements, and this happens to me all the time, looking forward to a summer flick, and you're like, oh, this looks like it's going to be great. You've got the director from Gladiator, you've got Russell Crowe, you've got Cate Blanchett, great actors. But, you know, the total is much less than the sum of the parts, I guess.
Absolutely. And, you know, and it's the fallacy of the Hollywood trailer, you know.
Yeah,
you can never swallow that.
One other interesting element about this film is that there's this fascination, it seems, in Hollywood these days with the prequel. You know, kind of look at the origin story, you know, whether it's Batman or I guess they've done this, they're doing the same thing here.
Yeah, it's a common enough device. I mean, the idea of creating mythology. You know, you kind of bestow on your subject matter something greater than just a simple piece of fiction. You give it some history, and you thereby give it gravitas that it otherwise wouldn't have had. In the Robin Hood case, it's very screwy, though, because he's not even, you know, he's not Robin of Loxley. He's an imposter who inherits sort of the station and wife of the real Robin of Loxley, or Robert Loxley, I guess, in this case. It's they take some liberties, let's put it that way.
Well, another, obviously, every summer you get sequels, it seems especially so this summer. The big one that's come out so far is Iron Man 2. I haven't seen it, but what was your take on it?
Well, it's, you know, it's fun, it's entertaining. I love Robert Downey Jr. I mean, he's a great redemption story. You know, you want to cheer for Robert Downey Jr. Whoever thought he was going to bounce back the way he's bounced back. So you're kind of cheering for him. It's also, though, a movie that just exemplifies the worst instincts of Hollywood to spend money, to let you know they're spending money, to make you spend money. And what's on the screen is largely money. There's not a lot of humanity. It's sort of about itself. And that can be off-putting. Although it is fun to a certain extent. Far more fun than Robin.
Yes, a number of the reviews I've read to the best part is, I mean, the action is kind of just besides the point. It's kind of the screwball dialogue between Robert Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah, and that could be crisper. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's okay, but it's not as good as the first one, and it's yet another sequel that gives a bad name to sequels.
Well, another sequel we thought we'd talk about, not a series I've seen, but, you know, it is obviously tapped into it's usually popular, is this Twilight series of films about the vampire stories based on the Stephanie Meyer books.
Yeah.
Was it Twilight Eclipse that's coming out this
Twilight summer? Eclipse is coming out in June, and the last one has already been shot, and they've been very smart about these movies. They've made them very quickly. They've released them at six-month intervals rather than, you know, milking it for a year or a year and a half, And part of the motivation was not letting the characters, the actors rather, age out of the characters. It's like Harry Potter at this point. It's like he's ready to get mail from AARP, I think. So he the eclipse phenomenon, although, you know, considering the much touted death of print and death of literature, these movies really have their fan base in a reading public. And you see several examples of that this summer. In the case of Twilight, I mean, remove the vampire aspect, and what you've got is, you know, young girl soap opera lit. Chick lit, you know, young chick lit, I guess. It's really just, it's romantic stuff tarted up with, you know, a certain amount of, and there really isn't a lot of bloodletting. There's a lot of scary monsters, but it's not very heavy stuff. Well, and it appeals to an adolescent audience.
Well, it seems like it's fused two genres. One, as you say, has always been popular, which is kind of the soap opera. Yeah. And the other, which is right now very popular again, which is, you know, we're not just, this isn't obviously the only vampire franchise out there. We've got True Blood on HBO and this Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer, this book that came out recently. So right. There's something in the air right now.
Well, the vampire thing has taken on a whole new cast since AIDS, I'm afraid to say. The idea of blood has an entirely different connotation than it had, let's say, two generations ago. And it has a, you know, far scarier connotation for younger people. And the vampire genre has become something, you know, metaphorical for sex, for drugs. It's got a lot more weight than it used to have. It's not... you know, it's not Bela Lugosi.
Well, you mentioned that there's a number of films coming out based on books this summer, and one of which is this these Stieg Larsson books, which have become quite popular. First one, the Girl with Dragon Tattoo, came out in the spring. Now, you have seen that film.
Oh, yeah. It's directed by Niels Arden Oplev, who's a Danish filmmaker. It was made for television. They all were made for television, so it'll be interesting to see how they fare in the theater. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is reputedly the best of the bunch, and it still has a certain amount of TV quality to it, but it also has, you know, a galloping narrative, and, you know, it's a revenge fantasy movie. There are certain situations that had Danish women on their feet screaming in the theaters when it premiered in Copenhagen, and anyone who's seen it, and I think quite a few people have, will know, you know, what I'm talking about. It's just it's not great literature, but it's that kind of, you know, beach reading, the kind of thing that grabs you, doesn't let you go, and it translates well in this case into a film. I don't think these books always do.
Right, and the second one, The Girl Who Played with Fire, is coming out this July, and I assume that...
And then there's The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest, which the book is just coming out.
Come out today, I think.
Yeah, it was it today?
Yeah.
And the other two, you know, they were TV movies in Denmark, at least.
And at least the first one, I think, is being remade here by Hollywood. So
well, the rights have been bought.
Okay.
But as far as I could determine, because I did write about this movie for the Times, there was no action on an actual remake. Sometimes the rights are bought up by producers to keep anybody else from doing it, and then they're renewed. I mean, you may never see a remake of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and a lot of that has to do with how well Girl with the Dragon Tattoo does, because if they see that it's, you know, used up the audience that's out there,
right,
why bother making right another movie?
Well, it's interesting that this, you know, I read this book fairly early on, and although, as you say, it's not particularly, you know, it's not great literature, it does, you know, it's published by Knopf, and you know, it has certain, I would say, certain literary pretensions.
Sonny Mehta's very hot.
Yeah.
About The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
He is the editor-in-chief over at Knopf. Well, you know, it's funny. I've been a fan of, for example, Henning Mankell, who writes also these kind of very dark Swedish mysteries. But those have, I mean, they're popular here, but not caught on to the extent that these novels have.
Yeah.
So it's, what is it about?
Well, I think it's the character, the girl of the title,
right,
who is, you know, not just a computer genius and a martial arts expert, but this kind of loner character who certainly adolescents can relate to. I mean, she's the ultimate outsider. She has a dark history that's not revealed in the first film, and it gets revealed later on. There's a love story involved. It's got pretty much everything wrapped up in a very modern kind of, techno-punk outfit.
Yeah, and I think you're right about that character. I think that's probably the most original creation of this series.
She's very appealing, and the actress is terrific. Mm-hmm. In the book, certainly she's attractive. And the actress does a great job of translating it to the screen.
Lisbeth Salander, right, is the name, I believe.
Yeah, and she's, I met her, she told me, she's half Swedish, half Spanish.
The actress, okay, yeah.
She has a very interesting look, and she'll probably be huge, you know.
Well, there was another, a piece in the paper this weekend saying that this character was also inspired by Pippi Longstocking, I guess, who's a very popular character. You would never put the two
together.
Can't
quite see that, no.
But that is, a famous Swedish kind of children's tale.
The girl with the dragon pigtails or something.
Well, let's move on to some of the smaller films. You know, these may be films that people have not seen or will not see, you know, might not get out of New York and Los Angeles. Are there one or two you could pick out that, you know, you get to see previews that you would say, okay, keep your eye out for these?
I think Restrepo will probably get some attention. This is the film that was made within it. You know, the filmmakers were embedded with a platoon in Afghanistan, and they were with them while they were fighting Taliban people who you never quite see the Taliban. It's a very interesting portrait of war, modern warfare, and with some fantastic footage. I would have liked it if there had been something more like a narrative to it, or some reflection about what Afghanistan means to us, either historically or politically or socially, but you don't really get that. It's far more immediate than that, and has a certain visceral punch.
So it's like a documentary.
Oh, it's a documentary. Yeah, sorry.
just to get back to that, it's interesting that a lot of films about the war tend to be, as you say, visceral in the moment, but they don't do a lot. They don't pull back and look at kind of the political context.
No, because we haven't had time.
Yeah,
I mean, this whole engagement in Iraq and Afghanistan have produced miles and miles and miles of film. Although you can't really use that metaphor
anymore
regarding digital shooting, but there's been no reflection. There's been no time for reflection. The far more interesting films will come out, you know, the way, let's say, Platoon did, you know, 15 or 20 years after the end of a war.
The more time to process it.
Yeah, and get an idea of what it really was all about.
Sure.
I mean, you're in a position now where a filmmaker can't really be critical of a war in which people are still fighting.
One example, I don't think it did very well, but was it The Green Zone that came out? Was that a couple months ago now? The Matt Damon, which Paul Greengrass, he actually did have a political agenda, or at least he was trying to lay out some kind of political argument there.
There have been a lot of, the Hurt Locker. I mean,
sure,
because that film probably could have been made about any war with improvised explosive devices attached to it. It really wasn't about politics, and it was just about, you know, men surviving warfare.
Yeah, which is what most of these films tend to be about.
But. Yeah, and that's what they should be about because they don't deal with the politics very well.
Right.
Coco Chanel and Igor Stravinsky, which has unfortunately been pegged as the other Coco Chanel movie. Igor Stravinsky is played by Mads Mikkelsen, who's this up-and-coming Danish. Well, in Europe, he's already come up and arrived. In the United States, he's less of a known quantity, but he was in the Daniel Craig James Bond film, I think two Bond films ago. He's in another film called Valhalla Rising that's coming out this summer. He's a guy to watch. The Igor Stravinsky Coco Chanel story is about an alleged love affair, a very aesthetically driven film, full of music, full of design, very much an aesthetes movie.
Right, sort of the anti-summer movie, it sounds.
It is, yeah. As opposed to, say, The A-Team.
Right.
or The Expendables, which stars Sylvester Stallone, Dolph Lundgren, Eric Roberts, and Mickey Rourke, among other blasts from the past.
Wow. You know?
Coming out of Cannes?
Yes, yeah. Why don't we talk about, because we're just, the Cannes Film Festival just ended a few days ago. The big story, at least for our listeners, would be this film about a monastery.
Yeah, it's about, it called Of Gods and Men. Xavier Beauvoir directed the story. Trappist monks in Northern Africa in 1996 who are murdered by Islamic extremists. I don't think I'm giving anything away. Apparently it's evocative of Into Great Silence, which was the terrific documentary about a monastery. And
yeah, the Cartusians. It was this 3.5-hour epic film.
Yeah, it was quite the experience. Not to be watched on DVD.
No, you're right.
You'd want to see it in a theater.
That's a theater.
But it's the criticism I heard of it is that it's less about a spiritual quandary than sort of sanctifying these guys. You know, I think it's less of a character portrait than a, deification of the monks involved. But apparently quite dramatic and effective enough to win second prize at Cannes.
Well, that's one to look out for. And again, that's a small movie that we hope, at least you'll be able to see on DVD.
Well, with the deals now, the way they're making deals for smaller films with VOD, day and dates,
right,
you watch it at home, on Netflix, on your computer. Not the best way. Of course, if you can do what I do, is you lay on your back in your bed, and you put your laptop on your chest, and it's like being at the Ziegfeld Theater because it looks like a widescreen.
Right.
Yeah, and there's the Joan Rivers documentary that's coming out summer, which is very funny. I thought it was funny. She's quite the character, quite the advertisement for plastic surgery.
She's been under the knife many times,
and she's quite open about it. And it's a bit bawdy. Joan being kind of rude, but and there's Eat, Pray, Love, which is based on that Elizabeth Gilbert memoir, which is. I've seen in every airport I've been in since the late 90s, I think. It's not really that old a book. It just, but Julia Roberts, James Franco, Javier Bardem, Viola Davis, Billy Crudup, Richard Jenkins.
It's a great cast.
It's a big cast. I think you're going to be seeing more of that with these Hollywood films, particularly international casts, because so much of the business goes on overseas. And so much of the money for these huge movies is recouped in foreign markets that you'll see a film with Julie Roberts and also Javier Bardem.
Sure.
Who's, no slouch here, but, huge in Spain. And
so he can open a movie in Spain.
Yeah. They cover all their bases. I mean, you see it more and more, these international castings and international co-productions. The money's coming from all different places.
From different places, yeah. So there are these different models out there, and that's part of what you do is cover this industry. And, you've got, as you said, the video on demand. You can watch, the IFC now. You can watch movies that are in the theater, on your television, at home,
you know.
So it seems like the industry is changing very rapidly, but still you get these big films, like in some ways the old formula, they're still trying with movies like Robin Hood. So,
and certainly with 3D, they're going completely the other way. Step Up 3D is coming out this summer, which is a dance movie. I don't know what 3D is going to do for the experience, but you've seen a couple of films already this year that were made in 2D and then revamped into 3D, Alice in Wonderland being one, which was financially at least very successful. Clash of the Titans being another one, which I think was artistically less successful. But they want to keep people in theaters, and 3D is the way they think they're going
to
do it.
They're looking for a way to get people out of their living room.
So unless you have a 3D television.
Right, which is, they're working on it.
They're working on it.
But not there.
They're working on stopping that oil spill down in the Gulf, though.
Well, John Anderson, we want to thank you for coming by, and look forward to your future reviews in America.
My pleasure. Thanks.
I want to thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine Podcast. I would encourage you to look online this week, where we have a special report on the closing of St. Vincent's Hospital from Associate Editor Kevin Clark. We also have a review of the HBO film A Special Relationship about Tony Blair and Bill Clinton, as well as an archive of past Foley Poetry Prize winners. A reminder that you can respond to our podcast by going to americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.